This is the Eye on Potatoes, brought to you by the National Potato Council. The Eye is the place to tune in for conversations with growers and thought leaders on advocacy, production, and all things potatoes. Now, here's your host, Lane Nordland.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another conversation here on the Eye on Potatoes podcast, brought to you by our presenting sponsor, Syngenta, delivering solutions to help producers face the potato industry's complex challenges. Syngenta provides growers with the unmatched field expertise along with an array of effective products. Explore Syngenta-us.com/spuddoctor to discover solutions for your potato growing obstacles today. Well, again, we are recording today's conversation as we had several of our episodes here on the Eye on Potatoes podcast from Potato Expo 2024. And friends, this was one of the most successful expos in its history. 10% more vendors on the trade show floor, thousands of potato industry members and stakeholders here in Austin, Texas, learning about the latest and greatest innovations, but also learning about what is different in the world and how maybe technology or social media can help maybe change the game for them or just provide them a little bit of knowledge. And that was one of the talking points this year in terms of that generation that we need to reach out in the World Wide Web world. Steve, is that even the correct? Can we even say World Wide Web anymore?
Sure.
It's just our world now.
Yeah, I mean, you can say it. I don't think many people do, but you certainly can. I know what you're talking about when you say it.
Steve Lurch is joining us here today. He has been with us on the podcast before. He's attended Potato Expo in the past, and if you recall, Steve is a former Google exec and a consultant and an award-winning international speaker. And your topic down here was very interesting this year, Steve, in terms of how TikTok and Reels and Shorts and just social media as a whole, how that has just changed people's lives for the good, for the bad, but it's just totally changed how we learn, how we digest information, how we receive it. I guess before we get to that, how has Potato Expo gone for you this year?
It's great. I love Potato Expo. This is my second time. So I was here at Potato Expo last year in Colorado. It's a fun event. I think this is true with a lot of ag industries, but certainly true with the potato industry, where there seems to be such a camaraderie of the people, and I feel like we'll just have fun. And obviously they're learning and networking and doing all those important business things, but it feels like a good time, and people are happy and just enjoying the experience, and so am I.
Well, it kind of feels like we're on display here in the podcast booth, which is good. It's bringing attention to the On Potatoes podcast. It feels like we're in a sky suite at a football game or a ice hockey rink kind of too, don't you think?
Yes. For those who don't know, I guess you can't see us. We are in a glass box with glass on all our sides and just hundreds of people walking by outside, probably many of whom wondering what we're doing in here. But I suppose if they look at all the graphics, they can tell it's the Eye on Potatoes podcast.
Yeah, they're hopefully subscribing.
I'm sure we look weird.
That gentleman is checking it out as we speak.
Oh,
hopefully he
You're
gets
right.
a
we're
smartphone out here. He's
definitely
gonna
on display.
But Steve, obviously yesterday you were on the expo stage with our friend Chef RJ Harvey with Potatoes USA and Chef Jason Morse from Ace Hardware. What was it like taking to the stage yesterday and talking about just this generational shift that we've seen and just information, how we take it in nowadays?
Yeah, I mean, it was great. I'm glad that the folks at Potato Expo wanted to have this type of conversation, because obviously some of these topics and the importance of social media or digital, obviously I talk about things like TikTok, it's easy sometimes for that stuff to get eye rolls sometimes for folks in agriculture, which is a very traditional industry, a lot of older folks in this industry, and who maybe don't, if they're honest, don't care what Gen Z watches on TikTok on their phones. So I'm glad Potato Expo cared enough and understood enough to know that whether we like it or not, that stuff is important and it's valuable, and consumers are, as you said, they're changing the way they get their information, the way they make their decisions, the way they get educated, and just the way they spend their time. And it's just unavoidable, and you ignore it at your own detriment, regardless of what type of company you're in or what part of the potato industry you're in. You're taking a risk by ignoring what consumers are looking for.
Well, and you bring that up because it's so important for agriculture producers to know consumer preferences, what drives those buying decisions, what health trend is being pushed or you know, top of mind. And yeah, I think when I started off in ag media or as a young person in FFA or 4-H, it was kind of right when MySpace was taken off. I miss MySpace. But when we look at that back then, it was, you go to a meeting like this and it was a big theme is you got to share your story. How do farmers and ranchers share your story? And that producers were limited even 20 years ago in trying to engage and share their story. So as we've seen the advent of Facebook turning into what it has from when it was first coming out of a dorm room to Instagram going from pictures to reels as a main focus, what do you hope attendees here at Potato Expo walk away with just knowing that they can share their story to consumers, to their neighbors even, and maybe it doesn't have to be them, maybe it can be their kids. Maybe that's a way to bring somebody back into the operation and have them be a digital content creator. I guess, what are some of those conversations like you've had with folks here at Expo?
Yeah, it's a good question, and I think, you know, if you distill it all down as simply as I can put it, or what I hope people take away from the conference, from my presentation, from listening to this, I suppose, is two things. One, that it's easy and getting easier to share your story and share your content, because like you said, there's more platforms, more formats. It's writing something, it's taking a picture on your phone, it's taking a video or a selfie, it's letting your kids do it. So there's more ways to do it. It's easier than ever. And the second is that it really is impactful. And sometimes it's hard to get people to understand that. Certainly, I think the brands understand it, the retailers understand it, but some of these other folks in the supply chain, starting with farmers, sometimes it's harder for them to see the appeal or see the benefit. But part of the way I look at it is you got to understand somebody is out there telling stories to customers, right? People are online all the time, on social media all the time, especially millennials and Gen Z and younger audiences. They're going to be looking at something. They're going to be looking at some food. They're going to be reading something about potatoes, something about diet and nutrition. Why shouldn't you have a voice in that game? Why shouldn't you be telling your story and giving your opinions? And it's also, quite frankly, it's the simplest, easiest differentiator you'll ever have. The ability to say, this is why my potatoes, this is why my products, this is why my business, because here I am. This is what I believe in. This is what I do. This is my family. This is my land. This is, you know, it's so easy, as you said, to share that story now. And it does matter to consumers. It does matter, even if you're selling, you're a B2B supplier, right? And you're selling through the supply chain. It matters to those people who are discovering you that you have a presence, you have a voice, that you're telling your story, and that you've got a good story to tell. So, yeah, in the biggest of nutshells, long story short, I should say, it's easy and getting easier, and it really is important regardless of your role.
Now, I want to ask you maybe about some tips that folks can follow, equipment that they should maybe look at, it's always nice to have good equipment, especially on audio, and it's really not that expensive. Believe me, I'm in the video audio world. But Steve, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and we're going to be hearing a message from our friends at Syngenta right after this.
Syngenta cares about potato producer productivity and offers a wide variety of seed treatment options, protecting your investment from the beginning. Syngenta's all-liquid seed treatment Cruiser Max Vibrance Potato offers protection from harmful insect pests, including Colorado potato beetle, green peach aphid, and leafhoppers. Additionally, Cruiser Max Vibrance Potato delivers immediate protection against fungal diseases. Contact your local retailer for information on Cruiser Max Vibrance Potato, Cruiser Max Potato Extreme, or Maxim MZ to find out what best fits your farm needs.
Hey, we're coming back today from the trade show floor at Potato Expo 2024. Our friend Steve Lurch is joining us here today. He has been a presenter here in the past at Potato Expo, and we're continuing our conversation with him today, focused on that TikTok generation, the millennials, Gen Z, and everybody that has everything in the palm of their hand. And it's just amazing what social media does. It scares me. It frustrates me. Let's be honest, but it's a part of our lives. And, you know, Steve, we were just discussing how it's important to share content, show consumers, show your neighbors what's going on in the countryside, the work that goes into producing food and fiber. And I mentioned equipment that comes along with it. We just saw a gentleman walk by with a selfie stick that has that's maybe too simple of a.
Yeah, it's a fancy selfie stick.
Just kind of taking video and whatnot to promote this event and to show Expo to so many people online. What are some easy technological advancements that people should look at equipment wise? What are some do's and don'ts that people should consider when, you know, whether maybe they're harvesting potatoes and trying to just share what's going on? What's some equipment you would encourage them to have on hand?
Yeah, and I can give a couple tips on that, but before I get into anything specific, the first thing I'll say is it is by no means a requirement. And if we look at the breadth of the internet and social media, the majority of the content, and the overwhelming majority of the content, was filmed on someone's phone with no lighting, no editing software, no photography skills. And there are countless pieces of content from YouTube to TikTok to Instagram that have gone viral to the millionth degree of tens of millions of views that were filmed just that way. Mm-hmm. I always say it's one of the great things about the social media world. It's kind of a great equalizer. You don't need money to make content people like. You don't need skills to make content people like. If you got an interesting thing to say and you don't have a good camera, just aim your phone at your face and talk. Fancy microphones and lighting and stuff are great, but by no means necessary. In terms of actual equipment, though, yeah, I think, again, your iPhone or Android, I'm an Android guy because I worked at Google for a long time. The cameras we have on our phones today are better than anything the world had 15 years ago. So they're great. They're perfect. They're wonderful. Certainly, GoPros are fantastic little tools, and there's a number of GoPro competitors. I don't want to just support one brand, I guess, but anything that's small and portable that is easily strapped onto yourself or your machine, you mentioned riding around tractor, is fantastic. But I'll also say, my one little, I don't know, secret, let's call it, to technology is to say, if you're going to put yourself on camera, if you're going to film yourself in any setting, you just wouldn't believe the difference like a $10 ring light makes. I give a lot of speeches, and during COVID, I started giving a lot of speeches from my desk. I purchased some equipment, got myself a microphone, a better camera, you know, doing these things as a profession. But by far, the biggest difference is putting that tiny little light on top of my computer screen. And it just, I mean, it's hard to describe if you haven't used it. And it's, I maybe paid $15 for mine and got it on Amazon. I'm sure there's better ones and nicer ones, but get the $10 one. It works and it's great. If I'll poke fun at myself a little bit, I got that lights for speeches, then slowly started using it every single time I had a video call because I just looked better. Yep. Now, if I'm sitting at my desk and my wife calls me for like a FaceTime on her iPhone, I'm like switching the ring light on because I look better and I just got to press a button. So the camera you have in your pocket on your phone is probably already good enough. Get yourself a cheap little ring light if you want to put yourself on camera. And like I said, if you want to go one step further, get something portable, get something like a GoPro and start moving around and strapping it to stuff and see what happens.
Yeah.
Start filming stuff, see how it looks. You can figure it out from there, but you don't need much, I guess, is my big takeaway.
It's just amazing how far video editing has come in the last 10 years even, but 20 in particular. I remember I used to make, you know, videos at home, and it could be cows, but whatever I was filming, and you had mom's little little tape, and you got the little cassette out, then you had to have the red, white, and blue, or red, yellow, and white wire to go into the computer and play it live in there to digitize it, and now you can edit almost everything on your phone, depending on what application you have.
And that stuff's getting better and better, too, and more accessible. I've been doing a lot of research on artificial intelligence lately, and just the tools that are available to make videos and produce content, and gosh, I know I said this already, but it's easier and easier and easier.
Well, that's like for me in my world in ag media. When you can take your YouTube link from the TV program and the digital content we've produced and put it into that AI technology, saying these are the points I want identified, make it for me. I want it to be 45 seconds. And it puts the text. It can put B-roll on there. It's not great because they don't have a lot of good farming, ranching B-roll. But just having text on there and sound effects and everything, it's amazing how that has changed interactions with people just on Instagram and shorts and reels, in the last year. That's kind of, people want to see the text of the voiceovers.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, and even that, you talk about the editing, and, you know, we went for years and years. Again, I worked at Google and working on YouTube products and talking to people about the right way to film content and the right way to edit ads and commercials and stuff. And even like these little things that have changed over time to make it easier, whereas it was always landscape, right?
Yeah.
Which is
yeah.
when you hold your phone sideways, basically. That's what we're talking about, like to get the angle of the video. And it used to be that if you took, I don't even know, when your phone is straight up, this straight up and down video that's more of a up and down rectangle, portrait, I guess is what you would call it, you would get like made fun of because it looked like less professional. It looked like you didn't know what you're doing. Now that's all everything is. Yep. That's what TikTok operates on. And largely the reason for that is because it's easier. Mm-hmm. It's just easy for people to hold in their hand. And again, we realize that these consumers that are taking in this content, they don't really care. It doesn't have to be the most polished thing in the world. They're fine if you just aim your phone at your face because that's what they do with their friends. That's the content they look at every day.
What are some tips for, say you're going to put together a 35-45 second video for YouTube, whether that's a short or uploading to the video aspect of it. How descriptive should they be? How important are hashtags and how important is the thumbnail? Because I think that's where so much of the content, when you see that thumbnail, it's just like, oh, I'm going to watch that. What are some tips you have for more engagement on these applications?
I mean, the truth is with most of these content portals, and YouTube's a good example of one where you can upload a video just that you took from your phone, you upload it, you write the name of it, and that's it. And that's fine, and you can do that. And again, there's a lot of successful videos that do that. That's a perfectly fine place to start. But when it's giving you all these options, write in your description, choose your hashtags, customize your thumbnail, every single one of those options, apply text to it, or captions, whatever you need. These are just all additional options, and in almost every case, they're options that are going to boost your content. Places like YouTube, they're looking for you to give it signals so that it can better traffic your content, so that it shows it to the right people at the right time who might be interested in it. So the more information you can put out there, usually the better. So it's the same thing with hashtags, right? Like the more hashtags, and I'm not saying post a video of your tractor and then make up 5,000 weird hashtags. But putting a handful in on every post of your company's name, your brand's name, your farm's name, I don't know, your name, your tractor, you know, hashtag farming, whatever it is. It just makes you more discoverable. Again, these are things that take virtually no time and virtually no skill, and it's a boost. I'm not saying it's going to change it tenfold over, but it's a boost, so why not take it? It's free. There's a popular YouTuber for younger people out there would certainly know when I say Mr. Beast who I'm talking about.
Yep.
He's the most subscribed to individual on YouTube with around 220 million subscribers. And he talks at length about, I forget how many people he has on staff whose entire job is researching and customizing thumbnails.
Goodness.
He talks all the time about how he could drive an extra 30 million views on a video, and for him 30 million that's like 15%, but still change the amount of views on this video by 15% by making the slightest little tweak to his facial expression in his thumbnail, and his team researches that and learns how to do it, not expecting the average agriculture person using YouTube for the first time to do that kind of stuff. But that's the other great thing about social. You test and you learn.
Yep.
You put out a video, you try a thumbnail, you try a description, and the next time you try something else.
Yep.
Or you build on it.
And it can be incredibly frustrating, though, if you don't follow analytics. I don't want to scare people either, but obviously I'm in the media world, so I like to follow the trends of when is my audience online the most. And I think Google does the best clear analytics in showing that, especially on YouTube, the times, the age ranges, the demographic. We might be scaring some people that are wanting to try this out,
but
Steve, but
easy.
I don't want to scare them.
I'll tell you two little tips on that thing real quick. One is something I literally have it bookmarked on my computer. If you just go to Google and you type in best times to post on social media, you'll get a bunch of websites. I just know the one I've saved is from a company called Sprout Social. It's a social media listening firm. And I just have this article saved on my top of my webpage. I click on it and I scroll down and it literally has a chart for me of, oh, I'm going to post on LinkedIn. The best times are Wednesday between 11 and 1. Simple
really?
As that. I just have it saved on my bookmark. Again, I'm sure tons of companies post these. I just happen to use the Sprout Social one. But the other thing I absolutely love with YouTube and YouTube analytics, now I'm probably getting too far in the weeds, but my favorite report is called a relative retention report, which is YouTube will actually give you a report of how people watch your video. And it's, let's say your video is a minute long. It can show you when during the video did people get bored? When did people leave? So then I know next time, oh, that shot I did of the tractor's wheels, that must have been too long because people got bored. Let's not do that next time.
Yep.
There's so much great data like that out there.
So what, again, people are busy, especially in the countryside. There's a lot of different apps out there now or streaming platforms. I guess if you had to encourage folks, if they're trying to share their story, where should they start? If they don't, they maybe have a personal account on Facebook or they watch on YouTube. What accounts should they maybe set up for their family business?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And there's probably not a perfect answer to it. I think certainly there's probably two ways to start this answer, two ways to start your decision process on this answer. The one is to look at, obviously, the size of platforms, right? And Facebook and Instagram and TikTok and YouTube are still pretty dominant. Obviously, Twitter, well, I guess I should call it X. I still call it Twitter, I'm sorry.
Formerly Twitter.
The platform formerly known as Twitter. Certainly the big ones are still the big ones, and getting up on them is huge. If you're going to do video content, it's very easy to get it out there on YouTube and TikTok. If you're doing more just images, Facebook and Instagram are fantastic. But the other way to look at it is to just go with kind of your comfort and go with what you like. I've been asked a lot about how do you decide what to post. And yes, you want to match it to your audience and to your business. But if you're just getting started, it's okay to just start with where you're comfortable. If Facebook's the only one you use, then make a Facebook business page first. And you're more familiar with it. It's easier. You're more comfortable. And maybe that'll expand later. Certainly for larger businesses, you want to be on all of them. You want to take every chance you can. But it's okay to start with your comfort and sort of build from there. The audience is big enough on any of these platforms that if you start doing it and committing to it and really trying, you'll be able to reach people. You'll be able to get your story out there.
How do people go about trying to understand the algorithms that change on these multiple streaming platforms that once you think you have it figured out, then it changes? Is there a way that folks should maybe just can do some research, or is it just literally you got to adapt every time they change that algorithm?
Yeah, it's a good question. I worked at Google for a long time. We certainly got all sorts of questions about the algorithms and why one search result is higher or lower than another. At the end of the day, every algorithm is essentially trying to accomplish the same goal. Every social media platform, every website wants you to stay as long as possible. So if I'm Facebook, if I'm TikTok, if I'm Instagram, all I want to do is serve up the best, stickiest, most engaging content. So what that essentially means for you is the more engaging you make a piece of content, the more interesting it is, the more people watch it, the more people comment on it, the more people like it, the more it's going to get served. It's sort of that like snowball rolling down a hill. That's how these algorithms work. You post something good and people like it, Facebook's going to say, oh, that's good. I need to show that to even more people because more people are going to stare at it for longer, stay on my site longer, and Facebook's going to get more ad impressions and make more money. Yep. So at the end of the day, it's look for your engagements, look for what people pay attention to that you post, and then, I don't say mimic it, but replicate it and build on it. You stick with what works. I think it's the simplest way to think about the algorithms.
Is it good to try to create a blueprint for the age range of viewers that you want, or does that help? And because I'm thinking, we call this kind of the TikTok generation, but there's people of all ages on these social media sites. Should farmers want to focus on people from 30 to 60 years old, or is that kind of a nonsensical question?
No, it's a good question. And honestly, it's one you'll probably get a different answer to depending on who you ask it to. I'll give my opinion as someone who's been doing digital strategy for 15 years or so. And I will say that age is certainly not at the top of my list of priorities when I'm thinking about content and thinking about audience. The cool thing about the digital world is we have so much more information on people than we used to. Back in, decades ago with advertising, it was hard to get a lot of information. We just sort of bucketed it in age ranges and genders and things like that. But now, if you want to tell a story about how nutritious potatoes are, let's say, you can create content and target content just to people who care about nutrition, just to people who care about healthy eating, just to people who care about diets. There are ways to do that on these social platforms and in marketing. And so whether that person is 15 or 50, if that's a priority of theirs, if that's something they care about, then go talk to them. Go tell that story to them. So I tend to think much more about what we would call psychographics, which is what do people think and feel and what do they want, as opposed to demographics of what's their age, what's their gender, where do they live. Certainly if you're a regional business, you're going to care a lot about where people live. But I care more about what people think. And I think that probably will connect better to the types of content you're making. But again, different people might give you different answers there. But that's my take.
Well, again, it's a brave new world, it seems, every day as technology and social media advances. I know it's a busy day here, and you probably want to engage with some folks here. They're actually, like, passing out rolls or something right now with a potato dish on them. I'm kind of getting
hungry. Missing out.
We're missing out here by the main stage. But, Steve, what are just some last-minute tips that maybe I didn't cover that you just want our listeners to be aware of or think about here today?
Yeah, I'll give you two. I'll go one for people who are more beginners or totally beginners, and I'll give one for people who are more, maybe already have a platform, maybe are already posting some, maybe a small business who wants to do more, do better. For beginners, I'd say, yes, go try all this stuff, of course. It's not that hard to try to post stuff. But if you don't feel ready yet, if you don't feel ready to like make a YouTube channel, a great first step is just going and looking at other people's content. If you're a farmer, there are farmers killing it on YouTube and TikTok. Go look at what they're doing. Get inspired. Same thing with Facebook or TikTok or whatever you're doing. Go find someone else who's doing it out in the open, out in the world on social media. Learn from them and then start to try to do it for yourself. And then the thing I'll say for people who are maybe slightly more advanced or a little further along is one of the great shortcuts to, I don't know, quote unquote, going viral or really expanding your reach is to talk about things people are already talking about. If you can find something that's interesting people, whether that's a topic, whether that's a viral meme, whether that's a weird TikTok dance that's going around, whatever that thing might be, if you can be a part of that trend, if you can give your sort of take on that trend or that topic, there's just so many more eyeballs out there looking for that stuff. You connect it with the hashtags, as you brought up earlier. But you know, if you don't have the great big creative original idea, look for the great big creative original idea that's already out there and go be a part of it. So those are my two sort of, I guess, walk away tips, we'll call it.
Well, again, Steve Lurch joining us here today. Steve, if our friends want to get in contact with you and maybe explore more of these opportunities, how can they do that?
Yeah, that would be great. Please, I would love for people to reach out. I have a website for my speaking and consulting business, which is storyarcconsulting.com. But yeah, other than that, you can find me on most of the socials. I, you know, as much as I talk about social media and I do use social media, I still find LinkedIn is just for what I do and for my business. It's where to be. But yeah, feel free to reach out to me, email me, find my website, social media. I always like talking to new people, and it's one of the reasons I like doing this and being a speaker. I get to travel around and meet people. So yeah, if anyone wants to chat, I'm always happy to.
Well, again, Steve Lurch, we appreciate you joining us here at Potato Expo and here on the Iron Potatoes podcast. With that, friends, thanks for joining us. Make sure and subscribe and share your comments if you want on maybe some topics or conversations you'd like to hear on the Eye on Potatoes podcast. With that, I'm Lane Nordlund. We'll catch you next time.
Thanks for tuning in to the National Potato Council's Eye on Potatoes podcast with host Lane Nordlund. For more information, visit nationalpotatocouncil.org and make sure to subscribe to the podcast today.